My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited is someone I have never interviewed before, but I'm intimately familiar with. This person is not a celebrity or a household name, but has lived an extraordinary life and has much to share about synchronicity and spirit. Celebrating the 64th anniversary of his solar return, Victor Furman is a businessman, interfaith minister, inspirational speaker, radio host, teacher, author, healer, empath, and above all, a seeker. Please join me in welcoming Victor Furman. Welcome, Victor. Well, thank you, Victor. It's very nice to be here with you. So let's start with your start 64 years ago. What was unique or different about your childhood? Well, I was one of these kids who was very quiet most of the time. I was not as boisterous or talkative as I am today, off and off on my own. But it all starts really when I was a baby. I was born in January of 1953. And interestingly enough, I had some experiences as a young child that I didn't find out about until a conversation with my mother about 2 years ago. My mom never would have conversations with me about strange occurrences in her life or shared with me anything unusual in her life. And we were having a conversation a couple of years ago. Unfortunately, she's elderly now and she's ill. But I was asking her if she had recalled anything strange because she was asking me why she has an autoimmune condition. And my brother, my sister, and myself all have autoimmune conditions and conditions that no one in our family ever had before. And I said to her, you know, Mom, I said, there are some people who believe that families who've had connection with extraterrestrials often manifest these genetic changes which result in strange illnesses. And I said, but you never believed in any of that. You never had an unusual experience, did you? And she said, no. And then she said, but, and I said, uh-oh, here comes the shoe that's going to drop. She said, you were about a year old, which would have made it about January of 1954. And she said she heard me crying about 3 o'clock in the morning, and she woke up to get me a bottle, and she went into the kitchen, and then all of a sudden, this intense orange light came through the kitchen window, and that's the last thing she remembered until the next morning. And I said, oh, I said, you have to wait all these years to share this with me. And she said, I never thought about it before you asked me in the way that you asked me today. So there was my first acknowledgement that something unusual had happened. And I remember often as a child waking up and having a sense of not being alone, having a sense of floating or levitating, and having a sense not of fear, but more of an appreciation of some type of training or education connected with these experiences. What do you mean by training or education? Well, I had this sense that when these experiences occurred, I would come back with information or knowledge that I didn't have any other direct connection with, nothing that I had learned, studied, read, observed in life, and stuff that as a child was kind of strange to have this expanded knowledge or experience. I remember in junior high school, I was about 11 years old, and one Saturday night, I woke up from a rather disturbing dream. And I got up and I started writing the short story called Infinity, which was then published in the junior high school literary magazine. And the storyline of Infinity began with a description of the aftermath of what I perceived to be a nuclear war, and then the healing of the earth and the return of life to earth and the return of civilization and the buildup of civilization and the return to a warring state and a warring nature in humanity, resulting in another nuclear war, And then the final paragraph was the beginning of the story all over again. Infinity implying that this would happen over and over and over again until mankind or humanity learned the lesson to war no more. And this was published in the junior high school newsletter, the literary magazine, rather. And my teacher cried when she first read it. And she said, "Where did that come from?" And I said, "I don't know. I just woke up from a dream, and this is what came out of me." So these are the types of experiences. I also wrote a lot of poetry as a very young child, poetry which did not seem to match with my upbringing, my experience, or my life. I wrote a poem called Injustice when I was about 12 years old. And the poem went, I still remember it. It said, "The blocks were closed around my neck. The splintered hole burned my neck sore. The blade would come tumbling to my neck, and I would see daylight no more. The king had summoned me to death. He said that I had been disloyal. Soon I would take my last breath to end a life of stress and toil. And now the black masked man, he comes to release the blade of destiny. 'Twas not the blade that gave me death. The crime of injustice gave death to me." That came out of me when I was 12 years old. I often thought that I may have been a reincarnation of Edgar Allan Poe, because I wrote a lot of this really depressing and grotesque unusual for a young boy, poetry and short stories at very young ages. And I was thinking perhaps that maybe I was a reincarnation of Poe, but I never pursued that, so I can't say that's what actually happened. I had been labeled one of these precocious or gifted children when I was very young because I had these talents and abilities that didn't seem to match my chronological age. And other things that would happen to me, I would have this information, as I had mentioned earlier, that would come to me of things that I had never studied or never been exposed to, but all of a sudden would just come from me, and abilities that I would have. For example, I started building crystal radios and then tube radios and then transistor radios at a very young age. This knowledge of electronics, which I did not study, and just sort of came naturally to me. So again, all of this strange information that was filtering through, could it have been from previous lifetimes? Possibly. But my sense is that a lot of these things occurred after I had my, what I referred to as night school, which was my encounters. And that's when these abilities and this knowledge and this information started coming through. So, Victor, what was your first experience with disembodied spirit? My first conscious experience of disembodied spirit had to do with my paternal grandfather. I was very close with him, and I saw him appear to me in spirit and smile at me and then disappear. And the family received word shortly thereafter that he had passed away. So that was my first conscious experience of disembodied spirit. And what's really interesting, and this is something that I only came in touch with a couple of years ago, I was attending a conference for FIONS, which is the Friends of the Institute of Noetic Sciences here in New York, and Whitley Strieber, author of the book Communion, and his wife Ann Strieber were the guest speakers, the keynote speakers at this, and they held a luncheon the next day that I attended. And Ann Strieber was sharing that after Whitley wrote his book, they started getting thousands of letters from other people, which at that time they basically had filed away. And then a few years ago, she started cataloging those letters. And what was interesting was that folks who had the experience of having some type of an encounter, extraterrestrial encounter, also reported having an experience of a family member in spirit appearing to them either before or after the encounter, the close encounter. And when she said that, it triggered this memory in my mind that the day after I saw my grandfather in spirit, I woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning. Something woke me up, and I went to the window and looked up in the sky, and I saw what I perceived in my young mind as the sky rearranging itself like a patchwork quilt, like patches in a patchwork quilt. And it didn't connect on me until later on when I saw a photograph that was taken by Wilbur Allen of triangular UFOs. And that's what I had seen that night, a series of triangular UFOs in the sky moving around and rearranging their patterns and their positions. So the connection between seeing someone in spirit and having that encounter, that experience, was not something that was part of my consciousness until I heard Ann Streamer talk about that. And that was about, I guess that's going on now 3.5 or 4 years ago at the Fions here in New York. So the connection between disembodied spirit and the ET UFO connection is something that's very real and very strong for me. Victor, have you had other encounters with what you consider to be ETs? Yes, I've had many, many in my lifetime. Still have today, actually. But an interesting story that happened when I was in the Air Force. I was stationed in Colorado, in Denver, Colorado, back in 1974. And one evening, one weekend, three of us got together and rented a Volkswagen Beetle to go up into the mountains north of Denver, into the foothills of the Colorado Rockies. And we were about 2 hours out of Denver on some road. We actually got lost. We weren't sure exactly where we were. In those days, you didn't have GPS, and the map that we had wasn't very accurate. And all of a sudden, the radio started crackling, and the lights in the car started flashing on and off, and then finally stalled out. And as we're sitting there, a giant delta-shaped, triangular-shaped UFO flew overhead. And we sat there watching it in amazement. And then a few minutes later, the electricity in the car came back on. We were able to restart the car. And then a group of Army or Air Force helicopters and planes were flying overhead, apparently in the same direction as the craft that we witnessed were flying. And we'll be back with more of Victor Furman on Destination Unlimited after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it, and you can hear it repeatedly without feeling anything. But when we introduce a new stimulus, save the food. We've achieved pulling a natural or inborn response from you. Save the food. Because 40% of all food in the US never gets eaten. Save the food. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14, 41,
31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted. I realized he forgot his homework. I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening is Victor Furman on the anniversary of his 64th solar return. So, Victor, before we took the break, you were talking about that experience that you had with some friends in the Air Force back in the early 1970s. You said there was a funny ending to it. Please share with our listeners. Well, it turned out that after the aircraft passed, the conventional aircraft, the either the Air Force or the Army aircraft that passed, apparently in pursuit of this delta-shaped UFO, we were kind of shaken up a little bit, and we were looking for a place to chill out and get some coffee and relax, and we stumbled upon a diner in a place called Hidden Valley, Colorado, which again was somewhere in the mountains northeast of Denver. And we parked in the parking lot. We walked into the diner, and I don't know if anyone remembers, there was an episode of The Twilight Zone in the 60s where the people are in a diner and they're talking about a UFO landing somewhere near the diner and thinking that the alien occupants had come into the diner, and everyone was suspicious of each other. And it turned out that the guy who ran the diner was an alien, and his customer who was sitting at the counter was also an alien. Well, wasn't exactly like that, but the people in this diner were really strange. Their energy was strange, their appearance was strange, and consequently we felt like we had actually walked into the Twilight Zone. So that was a very fond memory of that experience when I was in the Air Force. Victor, your spiritual life was put on hold for several years. Please explain. Well, a number of events happened in my teens that sort of changed the path of my life. I wound up in the United States Air Force in 1973. As I had mentioned, I was in the Air Force for 6 years. When I got out of the Air Force, I had a family. I have my daughter, Abby, who is the pride of my life. I adore her and love her so much. But I needed to get a regular job. I was doing broadcasting, among other things, when I was in the Air Force. And in those days, the radio stations that I had applied to were offering very, very low wages to start. And if you didn't get into a major market and know someone to get into a major market, you had to start in one of those smaller markets. So in any event, I put an ad in the Sunday Times saying, "Let my communication skills enhance your business." And on a Monday, I received a call from a gentleman who owned a welding supply company. He interviewed me on Tuesday, hired me on Wednesday, and 38 years later, I'm still in the welding supply business and actually working again for that company. I had worked for them for about 8 or 9 years, left one on my own for a while, and then came back to them and have been in this industry now for 38 years. That's welding equipment, compressed gases, and welding supplies. And that's my day job. That's what pays my salary. But in the course of that time, I had to focus on raising the family and supporting the family, and my spiritual life and my pursuits sort of were put on hold. I still had the gifts, the abilities, but I didn't pursue them, and they were put on hold. In my mid to late 30s, I had an issue with my back. And a friend of mine, a customer who practiced yoga, said, "You know, if you start taking yoga classes, you're going to find that it helps your back." And I found an adult education yoga class at a local high school. And I looked at the name of the teacher, and it said her name was Judy Hamsa. And something about the name resonated with me, and I was drawn to take her class, and I took the class, and she said, "I love your voice. Would you be willing to start facilitating meditation?" And I started facilitating meditation, and that led to a series of retreats at a Zen monastery in upstate New York where we would go and do yoga and meditation. And at one of those retreats, someone mentioned the word Reiki. Now, I had never consciously heard the word Reiki, at least that I know of in this lifetime, but it appealed to me. And there were three of us, including my wonderful teacher and friend Judy. And three of us said we would do something, we would take the class sometime in the not-too-distant future. That was in October, and, you know, thinking about the next year. Well, 2 weeks later, we were all in our first Reiki 1 class, and Reiki became the spiritual accelerant for me. That's where it all started, or restarted. My path reopened. And Reiki led to my psychic reawakening. Reiki also led to a number of major changes in my life. In those days, I'm talking about the late 80s, early 90s, if you wanted to go into a hospital and do laying on of hands, it was frowned upon unless you were either a licensed massage therapist or ordained in a faith that had laying on of hands as one of the sacraments. Well, obviously, I was not capable of taking 3 years of massage class to get a massage license. And in those days, a lot of my friends were sending a $25 money order and a essay about why they wanted to be ordained to a ordaining organization out in California. Others were using other types of organizations to get ordained. And of course, I never did things the easy way. I wanted to do things what I considered to be the right way. And through Reiki and a number of wonderful synchronicities, which I'll talk a little more about, I found an organization called the New Seminary of New York, where I enrolled and where I spent 2 years studying interfaith, every aspect of all the major religions of the world, and found out foundationally they're really the same, obviously. And in addition to that, all of the ministerial skills, including officiating weddings, baby blessings, funerals, and also working with people in hospice and other types of situations. And that was a wonderful and life-changing experience for me also. So I had I have to backtrack a little and tell the full story of what happened here. My first marriage was coming to an end because of all things, difference in spirituality. I was turning more to Eastern religion and Eastern philosophy, and my former wife, who was actually born and raised a Buddhist, became a born-again Christian. And I supported her in every possible way in developing her faith, but she could not abide by the changes that were happening in my belief system and my growth, and the marriage came to an end. Shortly thereafter, I was facilitating a Friday night meditation and healing group, and a friend of mine came to me and said, I know a woman who has breast cancer, and she would be interested in learning meditation and Reiki and all of the wonderful things that we do in those Friday night sessions, and I agreed to meet with her. And she met with her on a Sunday morning, and she opened her door, and she looked at me, and I looked at her, and we literally said, it's you, it's you. And we knew each other from obviously a previous lifetime, previous existence, connected immediately, and spent the next 3 years in the most incredible, life-changing, not incredible, it was credible, it was the most life-changing experience that I could ever remember. She and I did in those 3 years what a lot of people, a lot of couples don't do in an entire lifetime, including growth and learning and healing. And her name was Judy, and I have to attribute to her the full opening and ripening of my heart and soul as a man. She taught me how to love. I don't think I really knew how to love before that relationship. In any event, she was the one who introduced me to the New Seminary of New York. She had met the founder of the seminary, Rabbi Joseph Gelberman, who founded it in 1982 with a group of diverse clergy, including a priest, an imam, several yogis, including Satchidananda, and many other wonderful leaders of different faiths. And she actually attended with me. We attended together. And in the November of 1997 was our ordination and graduation. And that night we were graduating together, and her health had deteriorated drastically. And that was her last real public appearance. And I was president of the class, and I was giving the address for the class, graduating address, the final message for the class. And in the process of doing so, I acknowledged her, her strength, her courage, what she meant to me, and how our life together was literally life-changing for both of us. And it so happened that a woman by the name of Lori Sue Brockway was in the audience at that ordination. Of course, she was coming into the school, and it was suggested that she attend a graduation ordination ceremony to see what it was like. And she heard me, and she heard me talking about and honoring my Judy. And something about that impressed her and said to herself, where do you find a man who talks about a woman like that? In any event, we graduated, were ordained, and unfortunately, Judy's life was coming to an end. And the following January, she passed away. And I will always be grateful to her, my gratitude, my heart to her for the life-changing relationship we had. And like I said, she taught me how to love. I really didn't know how to love before that relationship, and she taught me how to love. And from that experience, I spent another couple of years with the school as a dean, in addition to doing my day job. And Lori Sue and I were in each other's midst during that period of time, and we became friends. And that friendship led to love 2 years later, and she and I have been together ever since, and we've been married now for 12 years, going on 13 years. And so, like I said, the synchronicity of these experiences, the one thing leading to another. When I am a strong believer in that, when you open yourself up to a path of love and healing, everything starts to happen. And that if you look for and acknowledge the things that are happening in your life, it leads you on to greater and better and more wonderful things. And I'm grateful to my Judy, and of course grateful to Lori Sue, who continued to open my heart and make me the man I believe that I am today. And I'm grateful. I think that men can learn from the energy of women, from the energy of really wonderful women, and can benefit and change their lives accordingly. Victor, that's a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing that with us. We're listening to Destination Unlimited on the OM Times Radio Network, and we'll be back with more of Victor Furman after these messages.
This is OTR-FM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
And And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this week is Victor Furman. And Victor, before the break, you were talking about how the interfaith training, going to the New Seminary of New York, your relationship with your late partner, Judy, and then the wonderful relationship that you now share with Lori Sue Brockway, how that changed your life. How did it change your life in other ways? Well, as you recall, I had mentioned that the reason I went to the seminary for ordination was so that I can go into the hospital and do Reiki and other ministerial and spiritual work without having to have a massage therapist license. And, you know, sometimes when you go into something with an intention, spirit has other plans for you altogether. On 9/11, I was out in Billings, Montana, attending a business training seminar, and Lori Sue was back in New York, and everyone knows what happened that day, and I was able to get back to New York finally, actually to Newark Airport, that Friday evening, because that was the first flight out of Billings, and there was still no air traffic going into New York City. And when I got back, Lori Sue and I, the following day, went to the Red Cross, and we volunteered as chaplains for the Red Cross, and served at a wonderful organization that was set up by the mayor, Giuliani, at the time, called the Family Assistance Center. His organization put together a pier, took one of the piers on the west side of Manhattan that was empty, and in a matter of hours turned it into a facility that had every possible resource for the families of those who were waiting for news of their loved ones, for those who were displaced by 9/11, who had lived in Lower Manhattan. And they had virtually every type of agency in terms of assistance, in terms of medical care, in terms of relocating people, giving them temporary shelter. And of course, we as chaplains with the Red Cross were there to counsel those who were grieving, those who were waiting for news of their loved ones, to be there to listen and to pray with and give support to those people. So, like I said, sometimes spirit has other things in mind for you. In addition to the work with the Red Cross, of course, we've both officiated weddings and funerals and baby blessings. And one of the aspects that especially stood out for me was hospice work. My experience with losing Judy taught me a lot about how to be present for someone who was in the final stages of their life and their families. And, of course, I was worked in hospice situations, worked with families, and helped them to let go of their loved ones. You know, it's amazing to see when you're in a hospice situation when there's absolutely no possibility that this person will recover and that they're close to death, how the families cling and hold on and really don't want that person to go. And that's totally understandable. It's totally human. But as we have learned spiritually and energetically, hanging on actually keeps them here longer than they really should be here. And one of the things that I worked on with families was to give each person an opportunity to say a final goodbye, whether the person was conscious or unconscious. And then when everyone had an opportunity to say goodbye, we would gather around the bedside and hold hands and beam love and release and freedom to the person who was in the bed. And more often than not, they would transition within a very short amount of time after receiving that service. And those families who had that opportunity, even though we all grieve when we lose a loved one, their level of grief was less, their sense of completion and closure with that loved one was greater. And in my experience on the spiritual side, I know that once the spirit is released, it has an opportunity to go to where it's going to without impediment, free to soar and then go on to the next adventure. So that's one of the beautiful benefits that I derive from working with the seminary and being ordained as an interfaith minister and the work that I have done in addition to everything else. You know, someone asked me, they said, you have a day job in the industrial side, working with construction companies and welding companies. How do you balance that, or how do you explain that in relationship to the spiritual work you do, including the paranormal, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, and the other stuff that I do on the other aspect of it? And I said, you know, the day job pays my salary. That's what supports my family. The night job pays my solary. And the word solary is something that I coined, and you're going to be seeing more of that in my blog, on my website, and in the work that I do coming up in 2017. So keep your eyes open for solary and the wonderful experiences of solary. So, Victor, you mentioned the paranormal field. How did you get involved in the paranormal field? Well, it's interesting. I was aware, as I had mentioned to you, of contact with spirit, with disembodied spirit, with the essence of who we are, the soul. Every religion, every culture, every faith has a word describing that energy, which is really who we are. It's not these carbon bodies that contain us. These are containers that allow us to function in this three-dimensional world. But they maintain that spirit, that energy. And it's always been my belief that that energy, the essence of who we are, the personality, the soul, the spirit, is a form of energy. And the second law of thermodynamics teaches us that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but changes from form to form. So consequently, when the carbon-based container that our soul is housed in, when this ceases to exist, when we physically die, what happens to spirit? And for those of us who've been aware for many, many years, and since our childhood, in my case, know that there is no end, that spirit goes on to whatever the next adventure would be. And that depends on what your faith and religious belief system is. It depends on whether you have a sense about reincarnation. It depends on whether you have a sense of the afterlife. And there is no right or wrong. It's different for each of us. And I believe the experience is based on our life experience, because what we take with us in each lifetime is what we experience in the education, the schooling, the knowledge, the wisdom that we obtain while we're in these carbon-based containers that we call our amazing and wonderful bodies. So in any event, like I said, I had these experiences all my life, so it wasn't necessary for me to find evidence of the paranormal because it was real for me. It was part of my life. It was part of my existence. But I had the wonderful, wonderful pleasure of meeting a gentleman by the name of Dom Villela, who was the founder of Paranormal NYC. And he and I became fast friends. I started attending his meetups here in New York, and he and I became fast friends. He invited me to join his team, and we had some wonderful and amazing experiences together on that team. As the time went on, he asked me to become co-director of the team, and I did. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of the experiences that we had, but I also had the blessing and opportunity of meeting other wonderful people in the field, including Chris George, who welcomed me into his second sight team, of Peggy Vetrano Shapiro, or Shapiro Vetrano, Easton Long Island Paranormal, and many other teams that invited me along as a guest investigator or as a guest helper. I really wasn't an investigator as much as I was a facilitator of moving spirit on if spirit was there, or a spiritual counselor for the families who were involved. And so that's how I got involved and maintained in the paranormal field. One of the things that we found, especially in Paranormal NYC, was that a lot of the people who would call us thinking that they were having paranormal or experiencing paranormal activity in their homes was predicated on what they were seeing in popular culture on television and the Ghost Hunter shows and the other paranormal shows that were popular and are still popular on television. And as we all know, if you actually take those shows and dissect them, a lot of the stuff that happens doesn't happen within the period of 2 or 3 hours. It happens in the period of many days, if at all. The truth is that a lot of the stuff that people think that has been paranormal in their homes really is not paranormal. A great example, both Dom and I have a background in electricity, and we found that in many investigations that we went on, that the problems that the people were experiencing were based upon bad electrical wiring in their homes, faulty grounds. A great example is a faulty ground. We had a call to a family who whose children were having nightmares. And we checked the electrical outlet behind the bed where the children slept, and it was not grounded, and there was a tremendous amount of EMF, electromagnetic field, coming from that outlet. And those in the paranormal field know that EMF can create sensations of paranoia. It can create itching skin. For people who are sensitive, it can make them see or feel things that aren't there. And so what did we do? We grounded that outlet for that family. And from that point forward, the children had no more nightmares. They slept comfortably and peacefully. And that ended that experience. So what we found was, if we went on 10 paranormal investigations, of the 10 paranormal investigations, 9 out of the 10 could be explained either through environment, such as electricity or other reasons, emotional, some type of emotional component or problem that the family was experiencing, or in some instances, just the fact that these folks wanted attention. And that's fine. And you know, we gave them that attention and we helped them find the truth. And we never left a family without helping them find the truth and bringing closure to them for what they were going through. Only about 1 in 10 cases actually involved disembodied spirit or some form of energy that was causing things to manifest within the home. And of the dozens and dozens and dozens of cases, and that included not only Paranormal NYC, but the other teams that I was affiliated with, we found the similar results time and time again. So my purpose and my goal in doing the work that I was doing was to bring the truth, whatever that truth would be, peace and closure to the family so that they could live in their homes without fear, with the knowledge of what was actually going on, and move on with their lives. And that to us was the most important thing. And Paranormal NYC, I must say, the credo of that team was to do exactly that. We're there for the living. We used to say, we're there for the living. The dead will take care of themselves. And of course, when there were dead involved in somebody spirits, I would take care of that. Victor, we're running out of time for this segment, so I'm going to ask you to continue discussing your paranormal experiences after these messages on the OM Times Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Join me, Maggie Chula, on Mondays at noon Eastern for Mastermind with Maggie. Let's work together in a mastermind. We can resolve life's problems and create goals for the future. Build action steps empowering you to create your life in partnership with your divine source of light, your soul. Manifesting your goals can be simple and easy, so come with your problems and leave with a plan. The Akashic Master Teachers and I are waiting to help you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Major key alert. Don't ever play yourself. You want to get that paper to secure the bag? You better turn in that paper and get an A+.
Learn the real major keys to getting to college at GetSchooled.com.
The key is to make it, so make it.
Brought to you by Get Schooled and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening is Victor Furman, and of course, that's me. No surprise to anyone listening to this show. And I think for this final segment, I'll just be me, because believe it or not, I didn't realize how hard it is to play two people and interview myself. So from this point forward, I'll ask myself the question, or I'll tell you what the topic is, and I'll give you my answer, and won't go back and forth pretending that there's actually two people here, although some people might tell you that there may be two people here, but that's for another time. So getting back to the paranormal work that I've been involved with over the last 15, 20 years, like I had said, the majority of the time, 9 out of 10 times, there was an emotional, environmental, or some other component that was not paranormal. And to give you a couple of more examples of these, we went to this gentleman's apartment one time, and he said he was seeing things that would appear in the house, that he was constantly getting ill, and that he just was very uncomfortable. He felt like he was being watched all the time, and believed that there were negative spirits in his apartment. So the first thing that I noticed, you know, you have to do a little bit of Sherlock Holmes sometimes when you have to use deductive reasoning. And I happened to look up, and I saw an air duct vent in his living room that had a piece of cardboard over it and was taped in place. And I said to him, "Why do you have cardboard taped on the air duct in your living room?" And he said, "Well, bad odors come out of that." At which point I said, "Aha." And I said, "Do you mind if I take a look?" And he said, "No." And I climbed up on a ladder. I took the cardboard off. I unscrewed the two screws holding the register in place. And lo and behold, the entire duct was filled with mold. Now, those of you who are familiar with the properties of certain types of mold, of course, they can cause allergies. They can cause illnesses. And some types of mold can actually cause paranoia, hallucinations, depending upon the amount of exposure and the time of exposure. So obviously this was the source of what was going on in his apartment. So I did my best to clean it out as best as I could. And we basically told him that he had to get a hold of his building manager and have them clean this out. Otherwise, he would report them to the Board of Health. And that was it. So there was nothing paranormal there. It was strictly environmental. And we helped this man, and he was absolutely grateful. So that was one example of an environmental situation. Another situation, which was really interesting, this gentleman and his girlfriend were living in an apartment, and they were complaining that strange things were happening. For example, they had a small dog that weighed about 4 or 5 pounds, and they came home one day, and the dog was on the top shelf of a bookshelf that was about 6 feet high. Obviously, no way the dog could have jumped up there by itself. The other thing he said was that coins were falling out of the sky and landing on both he and his girlfriend. So we're standing there and interviewing them, and in my training as an interfaith minister and counselor, I noticed that there was a tension between the gentleman and his girlfriend, which I'll explain later. But while we're standing there talking, out of the corner of my eye, I see him with his hand behind his back with a coin, and he flips the coin over his head, and it lands in the middle of the room that we're all standing in. And I basically busted him at that point, and I said, "Sir, I saw you flip that coin. Let's sit down. Let's talk about this. Let's find out what's going on here." It turned out that in addition to being boyfriend and girlfriend, this gentleman was also her manager. She was a singer. And she actually was contemplating leaving him. So he was using these fear tactics in order to maintain his control over her. And they needed a lot of counseling. And of course, that was not my responsibility or job at that point. But we did refer them to counseling. And they were able to work out their situation. But here's a situation where someone was feigning paranormal activity to maintain control of a relationship that was going bad. I'll give you one more example of a paranormal experience that people claimed that they were having, which really wasn't paranormal. We had received a call from a couple up in a very affluent neighborhood, And they were building their dream house after 25 years of marriage, and in a very, very affluent neighborhood. So this property was costing them several million dollars. And they said that they were told that there were paranormal occurrences in their home that were preventing the home from the building from being completed. So we went up there, and while the rest of the team went around and checked the house, and by the way, from a standpoint of environment, this was one of the cleanest homes. It was brand new. It was one of the cleanest homes we've ever found. In the meantime, I started interviewing the couple using my interfaith ministry and counseling skills. And I immediately detected that there was a strain in the relationship between this man and his wife. After 25 years of marriage, building their dream home as a gift to each other, and that there was something more going on there. So during the course of the interview, I found out that this woman professionally was what's known as a construction supervisor. Now, if you have someone build a home for you, normally you hire what's known as an owner's representative to manage the construction project so that you don't have to get involved in it. And it turned out that this woman decided to take this job on herself instead of giving it to a owner's supervisor or an owner's representative. And consequently, she was highly critical of each of the contractors, never happy with anything they did, and they would quit in the middle of the job and walk away. As this was happening, they'd have to hire new contractors to rip out what was done and start doing work over again. And the cost of their budget was going sky high, was causing a strain on their relationship. And consequently, this is what was really happening there. They actually had brought in a psychic who said that the property had been owned by a Native American chief who was unhappy that they were building the home on his property and was going to prevent them from occupying and really destroying their lives, which was absolutely a lie. So in any event, after 3 hours of sitting and talking with them and finding nothing whatsoever in the home that would lend to the question of paranormal activity, we convinced them to get an owner's representative to finish the construction job. And that's what they did. So again, a situation where proper counseling and proper evaluation and using skills other than the normal skills that are attributed to paranormal investigators help to clarify the situation. So what I would say to people out there who are on paranormal teams, if you're looking to find evidence, go to some of the public places, Waverly Hills or Gettysburg, and there you can actually do something and not have to worry about helping people. But if you're out to help people, it's not about finding evidence. It's not about posting evidence to your website. It's not about wearing the same t-shirt, the team t-shirt. What it's about is helping people by finding the truth. And if there's nothing paranormal, so be it. There's nothing paranormal. Help them find the truth. Leave people comfortable in their homes. Follow up with them. Leave them peaceful. If you find an emotional situation, get referrals. Find people who can help them. Social workers and psychiatrists and psychologists are out there who are available. Get a list of referrals. Hand them off to other folks, because obviously, unless you have training in it, you shouldn't be doing that yourself. If you work with people in their private homes, it is your responsibility to leave them comfortable in their homes and only leave them with the truth. If not, you shouldn't be in the paranormal field. That being said, I announced my retirement from active paranormal investigation last year, and a lot of my friends in the community asked me why. And the bottom line is, I don't have anything to prove. I don't have anything to discover. I don't need evidence because I've lived this my entire life. So consequently, I decided that with other things happening in life between family issues and my day job being extremely busy, that unless there was something that I could truly contribute to. If there was a family in trouble and one of the teams that I've worked with comes to me, I'll come out of retirement for that purpose, for that family. But other than that, it was a great experience. I'm grateful to especially Dom Valella and all the other teams that I work with, and I wish them all well. And like I said, if there's something that really needs attendance, needs my attention, my skills, the gifts that I have that I can bring to bear, then I'll be more than happy to come out of retirement on that occasion. But other than that, it's been a blast. It's absolutely been wonderful. So people ask me if I enjoy hosting the show Destination Unlimited, and the answer is absolutely. I, if nothing else, am a seeker. And there are topics in life that fascinate me. This concept of the crossroads of science and spirituality. I attributed this to Einstein, but I'm not exactly sure. I can't find the actual source of this quote, but the quote went, and I'm going to paraphrase, "One day the crossroads or the paths of science and spirituality will crossroads. And on that day, we will know the mind of God." And I think that's why I do this show, to bring on guests from different disciplines, from archaeology and psychic phenomena and mediums and clergy of various kinds and counselors and people who have had all types of experiences, in the hopes that if we glean enough of this information and bring it together, we will start finding the answers to what we have deemed mysteries, but maybe are only mysteries until we are able to remove the cover and pull back the curtain and see the connection between all that is. And that's my hope. That's why I do this work. And that's what I aspire to in this lifetime. Someone asked me if there's any topic I won't cover. Not really. I'm amenable to any topic that will look at the mysteries of life, that'll look at the things in this world that still remain cloaked. So no, there's no topic that I won't cover. What's coming up for Victor Furman in 2017? Well, as I mentioned before, I actually trademark the word solary, which I described as the work that I do now, the radio shows, the ministry, the healing, the psychic work. The day job pays my salary. This stuff pays my solary. And I'll be writing a book with that title. My website, victorthevoice.com, is going to feature a recurrent blog about solary and the experiences, the wonderful and strange and synchronistic experiences that I've had, that we all have, in the hopes that we start identifying these experiences as parts of growth for our soul, so that we can all have our solary paid. I am grateful to each and every one of you for listening every week, for sharing my guests with me and this wonderful trip that we're taking together on Destination Unlimited. I thank you for joining me tonight and for putting up for my dual personality, my little split personality here tonight, Victor Furman interviewing Victor Furman. Look forward to seeing you all again and speaking with you all again next week. Thank you to all the folks who sent me wonderful birthday greetings on my 64th birthday. I greatly appreciate it. Have a wonderful week, everyone, and good night.